Dunkin' Cold Coffee can be brewed at home in your Keurig coffee maker with Dunkin' Cold K-Cup Pods. Just brew it hot over ice and enjoy flavor that's crafted to serve cold. The home with Dunkin' is where you want to be.
Whether you're a morning person or a bedtime procrastinator, everyone deserves a mattress that works for their style. And you'll find the best mattress for you at Ashley. The new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley brings you one-of-a-kind body-conforming technology, making every sleep tailored to be your best. The collection also features cool-to-the-touch covers and motion absorption to help minimize sleep disruptions from partners, pets, or kids. Shop the all-new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
Hey. Hey, you. Listen. Do me a favor. If you're listening to this podcast on Apple Podcasts, take a moment to hit the subscribe button. It's free and easy. That way, you'll never miss an episode of Hot Takes on a Plate. I mean, you don't have to listen, but don't you want the option? Don't you want the reminder? I'm just saying. And if you listen on Spotify, tap the follow button, does the same thing. That's all. Okay, here we go. So we're airing this podcast. It's dropping the day after the election. However, I am recording this on the Friday before Election Day. So I have no idea who won the election. I have no idea if the election has even been decided yet. But what I do know is that it was probably a long night for a lot of you. And some of you who are listening right now may be hungover. Because election night is a drinking night, and it's a drinking night for a lot of reasons. It could be a celebratory drinking night. It could be a anxiety drinking night. It could be a depression drinking night. It can be a lot of things. So I thought, what better topic for this week's Hot Takes on a Plate here on the Believe Podcast Network than booze? And joining me is a James Beard award-winning writer who specializes in booze, Brad Thomas Parsons. How's it going?
Hey, Rob. Thanks for having me on.
So when I get one of those names like Brad Thomas Parsons, am I supposed to just say Brad? Do I have to say Brad Thomas? What am I doing here?
That's, you know, I never realized how complicated it would be when I started using my middle name sort of in my pen name, quote unquote. But Brad is fine. But a lot of people call me BTP or BT. But it's not. But I get called when I go to events sometime. It's under Thomas and not Parsons. So, but I've had several publicists email me like, I don't know how to address you. So I didn't mean to make it complicated, but Brad works.
International man of mystery.
Yeah.
It's funny because like you and I know we've been following each other on social media for a while. We've never actually formally met, but I don't usually like to tell like these kind of stories at the top of podcasts because I think most people don't care, but I find this one very amusing. And I don't even know if you remember this, but I swear to you, it was probably maybe last winter, I remember getting on a New York City bus and seeing you.
Yeah.
And we gave each other this like subtle head nod from like across the bus, even though we had never actually exchanged words. It's like we recognized each other's faces. And it was just kind of funny and comical and like very New York that like two basically strangers are like nodding at each other on a bus.
Well, we were in the same room, if you remember, maybe a year before that or sometime before that at that restaurant Lilo.
Yes.
So I was there, you were there. We didn't know each other, but due to geotags on our respective Instagram posts, I think we commented on each other's posts like, hey, I was just there. So I knew what you looked like, obviously, but like, yeah, we had never, besides a couple DMs on Instagram, had never met in person, but I knew what you looked like. And I think we were still in dark day mode then, and like riding the bus still is scary for many people now, but
I think it was pre-shutdown COVID.
Yeah.
I think it was like maybe, if I were to guess, maybe like late February, early March, where
yes,
like
things
we
were
like,
about to take a turn,
but we didn't know yet what the rules were. I remember actually the last podcast I recorded in person was I think March 11th. And I met a friend at a restaurant he was consulting at. And it was like, I remember going into it going, okay, like we weren't talking about masks at the time or social distancing. Mm-hmm. But I remember like bringing my two mics and taking the mic cover off of his mic, just leaving the metal so I could like wipe it down with disinfectant when we were done.
Yeah.
And like, I remember like going, okay, we're not going to shake hands, but like he gave me a hug anyway because everybody was on a different you know, wavelength. And it was just like the whole thing was like very confusing and awkward. And so, yeah, we were definitely in that mode then.
Yeah. Cause I remember, I distinctly remember like you were sitting in the front where I was sitting and it was kind of, it was awkward to get up and talk to you because the bus was moving and things, and you got off before me, I think. But yeah. And I wrote about that that last Friday the 13th for, a site called Punch where, cause it just was etched in my mind. You sort of knew like things are going to change. You knew things were going to change. And I have a lot of Italian friends and they were warning me like, start, you know, load up for a month's worth of food. This is serious. This is serious. And now I'm sending those same texts, you know, we're going back because now they're in the same boat again, unfortunately. But yeah, it happened. It was it cascaded each day. It was like, boom, boom, boom. But then you kind of knew. So that last night I went out in the neighborhood to a few spots, sort of, last hurrah, just to say, you know, wish well and tip
last call.
And, yeah, the little last call. And then sure enough, you know, that Monday, everything was closed for a while. So, yeah, but no, so we should definitely meet in person at some point for if you're up for it. But yeah, I do remember that very well.
Well, here on Hot Takes on a Plate, you, the listener, gets to eavesdrop on the ultimate food fights as I debate my culinary world friends and other eating and drinking enthusiasts in their areas of expertise. So, Brad, we're going all in on booze. Ready?
Ready. Okay.
First one, the best election night drink is a Pilsner. Yes, that's right. I'm going beer. Mm. Here's why.
Yes.
It's a weeknight. You don't want to be hungover for the next day. You know, Pilsners, it's low ABV. You know, it also means you can drink more of them. So if it's a long night and you want to have more than one or two, you can do that and you're probably going to be fine the next day. And also, to me, beer is what you drink when you watch sports. And to me, politics, they're sports. Yeah. And so, you know, what better thing to drink when watching the results coming in than a Pilsner? Tell me I'm right. Tell me I'm wrong.
You're sort of right. No, I think the Pilsner, I love Pilsner. I drink it all the time. I think election night though demands something a little stronger and, you know, so I would go both. I would go like a Boilermaker approach and have a Pilsner or something like Miller High Life, like a lager on hand, but have a sipping whiskey you're going to dip into throughout the night to be a little more fortified. So because it is Super Bowl like, but there's so much tension around it that I think you need something a little more calming than simply refreshing.
I just worry about the day after, you know, you have work. I guess this year's a little different because a lot of people are working from home. I guess you can just keep your sweatpants on and, you know, go waist up on the Zoom calls and whatever you got to do. But I don't know. Like the worst thing is having a hangover going to work. That is not something I would ever recommend to anyone.
I agree. I mean, we take for granted that, I mean, as a writer, like everyone's working from home. And even if people are working from home, they're really working, you know, have to meetings, Zoom calls all day. Things like that. So yeah, you do have to take that into account, but I think this is a very, I think it's sort of expected. It's like the Monday after Super Bowl where it's one of the highest, I think, sick day call-ins or something for that. It's sort of expected that things aren't going to be normal no matter what the results. And I know just watching that first debate, I don't think I was drinking that night, but I felt like I was the next day. Like I was just so tense and aggravated and I gave myself a personal day and I worked for myself. You know, I was kind of like, you know, I'm not doing anything today because I was up late, just stressed out, couldn't sleep, freaking out. So I think there's gonna be a little bit of that element. So maybe
the key is happy medium. Start with like a good cocktail and then kind of work your way into a Pilsner or a lager.
Yeah. Look, I like it. They're hard to find. Miller High Life ponies, you know, the kind of, a lot of bars have them, but retail, they're tough to find. I've got a couple spots in the neighborhood. I don't tell anybody where they are. And so I always buy a six pack. So that's sort of, to me, almost like a glass of water sometimes having, you know, it's a great beer. It's iconic, but that's something like if I have someone over for a drink, they get that as well, whatever they're drinking. It's sort of a tandem drink, as my friend Brian Bartles, who's a bartender and writer, calls it tandem drinking.
Now, are you a believer in this whole, like, don't mix beer with liquor or don't mix this with that? Like, you know, you hear all these things that, like, you're going to get, you know, what do they say? Beer and liquor makes you sicker or something? Or beer before liquor makes you sicker?
Liquor before beer, all that. Yeah, yeah. I think I think it depends how much you're drinking. It's more the quantity and the whether you're doing intentionally or not, you know, going out sometimes. Like I have a lot of liquor at home, but I don't drink a lot at home. So when I go out, I feel like I make up for it sometimes. So you might have four drinks in one sitting, which to a doctor, that seems like a lot if you add that up multiple times a week, which I don't do. But like, I think I don't like to mix it up too much. Like I'm fine having a cocktail. If it was a regular dinner setting pre-COVID, I would have a cocktail. Maybe I'd have a glass of wine and then have an Amaro at the end. So I am kind of dipping around different things. But generally, I can switch with ease between beer and mixed drink. I don't drink a ton
of
wine.
But you're a pro.
Yeah, I guess so. But I don't drink a ton of wine. Like I have so many friends that are wine pros and I get wildly intimidated, but I just kind of embrace and whatever they're drinking, I'll drink. So I know it's going to be great and they're not going to steer me wrong. But like I'll have a glass of wine with dinner and things like that. But generally I'm a cocktail or beer guy. And I found, we'll probably talk about hangovers more, but yeah, I never used to think like, oh, I'm not hungover. But when I don't wake up, when I sleep all day, that's a hangover, you know, the next day, like when it's Saturday and I'm still in my sweats at like 3 PM and haven't eaten yet. And that's like, okay, that's technically a hangover. So it does happen occasionally, but for the most part, you don't want to like mix shots and wine and beer and Brandy Alexanders and all kind of things. Like be consistent. Like you can jump from a Negroni to a Manhattan, but I try to stay in the same area roughly of family of what I'm drinking and not going too crazy mixing it up. But I think it depends on the person too.
So you transitioned nicely mentioning hangovers and eating, because the next hot take is that, you know, obviously some of the listeners right now are probably hungover. And to me, comfort food as a hangover cure is a fallacy. I think that most comfort food is high in sodium, and sodium just dehydrates you. And the last thing you want to be when you are hungover is dehydrated. To me, if you want a good hangover food cure, give me some good bread. Just let the bread sop up whatever's inside of you. You don't need a bucket of fried chicken. You don't need a big hunk of, you know, barbecue or whatever. Like I just, to me, that's just this, like super fatty, salty foods when I'm hungover. You know, I know I do have a little bit of a craving for a good breakfast food every now and then when I'm hungover, maybe a bacon, egg, and cheese, but like salt is just, it just wrecks you. Tell me I'm right. Tell me I'm wrong.
I got to say wrong there. You're thinking about it too much. I think you have to go with your gut, so to speak. And like even though, yeah, realistically, I know people take you take vitamin C, do this, do that. I would crave like a BEC is what I would want. You know, I know maybe that's not the best ultimately scientifically or physically to combat the hangover. I don't go back to booze. I don't believe in the hair of the dog, the bit you stuff. Like I wouldn't go for a big Bloody Mary the next day. I know it's not good for you, but I drink, I would drink Diet Coke over Coke, but an ice cold, bubbly carbonated beverage, something like a Coke or Diet Coke, it hits the spot for me if in the morning. Again, that's not good for you either, I know. I couldn't imagine myself just, so you would just roll out of bed and start gnawing on a, like a bagel on the counter?
Would be great, but my thing is this. What you're saying is you're going like saying, okay, whatever you're craving in that moment when you have a hangover, that's what you go for. But the cravings are what got you into the hangover in the first place. Because the cravings, you didn't know when to stop drinking. So why are you listening to your cravings? Your cravings are killing you.
I'm not the most disciplined guy, so I will admit to that. I'm not going to wake up and go running or be super healthy. And I just have a feeling like, you know, I might have a loaf of bread on hand. Like you said, there might be, you know, in New York, you can easily go get fresh bagels. I don't have bagels on hand. I would go get them. So I think you're minimizing, ideally, unless you're going out to brunch, which I would say you're minimizing the amount of travel you have to do.
Yeah, so whether
whether you're having it delivered or go to a bodega on the corner. And when I don't want to leave the house, you know, the BEC or a version of that is what I would seek out.
Pancakes. I mean, pancakes to me are a good carb that can absorb. I mean, you know, look, I think the key
is pancakes for sure.
Maybe if you know it's going to be a long night, you make a list on the fridge the night before as like a reminder, like don't do this the next day, do this the next day. It's better for your body.
Yeah. No, I think if you're being righteous, yes, you are correct. But if you're being realistic, I think most people I know would, you know, and I know friends who, like, I have a couple of friends when we used to hang out more often in the city in Manhattan. I say goodbye to them at the bar, you know, late at night, and they were heading to the Taco Bell near their apartment. They were having like Taco Bell before they went to bed. And so I don't think they're waking up and having a whole wheat roll. I think
what informed this whole, you know, theory of mine was probably in college. In college, you know, I went to college in Virginia, James Madison University. We did not have great pizza there. Our pizza, especially late at night, was it was fast food pizza, you know.
Okay.
It was, and so like in college we'd order Papa John's, which I haven't had in years, but you know, and then you get the garlic dipping sauce, and Papa John's is just a brick of sodium. That's all it is. It is a brick of sodium. And I never ate Papa John's before I went to bed and woke up feeling good the next day. That never happened.
No. Even when you're sober, I think he's...
No, it's just you want to just suck everything out of your body that's good, eat Papa John's.
Yeah.
What do you think of Pedialyte? Everybody says Pedialyte is the hangover cure.
I personally have never done that. I mean, it's putting back the fluids and electrolytes in your body. If closest I would do to that is Gatorade.
Yeah.
You know, I usually have, I know it's just pure sugar. It's not good for you, but, especially when it's hot out sometimes, like having an ice cold jug of Gatorade hidden in the back of the refrigerator. I'm specific about my flavors and styles, and I went down a rabbit hole of Gatorade because the colors don't really mean what the flavor is, and trying to figure out like, what is, you know, glacial ice or whatever.
Glacial
breeze. Exactly. And like, oh, I like the blue one. Right.
You know, anyway. the flavors of Gatorade to me remind me of the sense of like Old Spice, you know, like if you've ever like been in like CVS looking at the different deodorants, they're basically like Gatorade flavors.
Exactly. No. Yeah. I will admit I use an Old Spice deodorant. And I use Fresh, it's called. So,
but they all do that. Even like the Axe, it could be Axe, it could be any of them. Dove. It's like actually, if you look at the scent names, they match up pretty well with these crazy Gatorade flavors that are not the traditional.
I like that. No, yeah. So I've never had it. I've never had Pedialyte, but on hand. I know some younger friends of mine who do that, but that was never something I adopted.
It's what the kids do. It's the millennial solution.
Yeah, I'm fine having Gatorade or like something cold and bubbly, but I'm not necessarily feeling like it's making me feel better. It's just hits the spot. Like especially in this summer, when it was relatively hot sometimes, like just coming in, you're just icky and the AC isn't kicked on yet. Like that's what I would reach for. But in terms of hangover, just enough of it too. Like it probably doesn't fit your spectrum, but ice cold chocolate milk straight from a jug. I know it's like a serve.
In my family, like I love dairy products and I hate drinking milk. Like ice cream if you said there's one food I could live on the rest of my life, it wouldn't affect my health. I could just eat it all day. It would be ice cream. Yet I can't drink milk. Milk just on its own is like repulsive to me.
See, I can only have it from the chocolate milk. I can only have it from the spout. Like I live alone, so it's just mine. Occasionally if I'm at a diner, like a Waffle House, I'll have a chocolate milk or something, you know, like on a rare occasion, whether it's late at night or early in the morning. But I probably shouldn't be drinking as much milk. I don't drink a lot. I mean, I have some of my coffee.
I mean, Ron Burgundy was right. Milk was a bad choice. It was a bad choice.
But that so go ahead.
As I say, next one. We're going to get into cocktails now because I know that's what you're here
for. We're so far.
The best cocktail, and I know it's polarizing, but it's the best, is a Negroni. I know it's polarizing. I know it's trendy, which makes you want to almost shy away from it. But to me, it hits all the right notes, and it's so easy to make. It's three ingredients. You know, you can debate the ratios on them, but you're taking three ingredients and you're stirring them. You don't have to muddle anything. You don't have to do anything. And, you can even pre-make it, put it. I've pre-made Negroni, put it in a bottle for a party, and it's done, and you pour it out. You know, you get the bitter, you get the sweet, you get that balance. To me, Negroni is the perfect cocktail. Tell me I'm right, tell me I'm wrong.
You are 100% correct. Yeah, it's my favorite drink too. Like I wrote a book called Last Call, which was asking bartenders what their last drink would be. And of course I have to fend that question myself, and I hemmed and hawed and danced around it, but ultimately it would be a Negroni. Which, you know, as you mentioned, it's traditionally equal parts gin, Campari, sweet vermouth. The one way to really mess it up is with the vermouth. Like if you don't, you know, you want to keep your vermouth refrigerated at home. Once you open it,
it has a short shelf life.
Yeah, treat it like wine. Buy the half bottles if you can of like Dolan or Carpano Antica. But that template gives you a lot of room to play around with. You know, there's obvious cocktails on their own that stem from that family, like the Boulevardier, which is made with bourbon. The Spagliato, which is one of my favorite twists on it, which instead of gin is Prosecco or sparkling wine. You give a Mezcal Negroni. I like equal parts. I like making it.
Me too.
Building it. Sometimes I'll do this. If I have people over, I'll make two at a time in a mixing glass and pour them out. But you can build it in your glass, big cube, handful of ice. Yeah, it hits those notes as like bitter, sweet, herbaceous. But the gin makes it a serious drink, something contemplative as well. You know, it looks like it's an easy aperitivo drink, like a spritz, but you have to watch yourself. You know, I've had plenty before dinner. I've had more than one before dinner, but really is it's like having an old fashioned or a Manhattan. It's something you need to take seriously. And also has, it instantly captures that, you know, to me, like it's Italy in a glass, it's La Dolce Vita. But so easy, and it's just sophisticated, but also simple to make. So yeah, I'm not going to fight you on that one. And I wrote something for Imbibe magazine about, you know, the solace of the Negroni during pandemic, where it was easy to make. And like you said, you can batch them. You can make a bunch in a jar, a bottle, keep it in your refrigerator or freezer and pour them out as needed. And those variations are great. And so just keep an eye on your vermouth. And I love mine with Campari, but there's a wealth of red bitter options out there now too. So some domestics and from Italy, other places. So you can try those as well. But I like that distinctive taste of Campari gives the Negroni its soul, I think.
Yeah, I do too. I do too. And I think, you know, you can play around with the gin, obviously. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, for me, like, I think too high a proof gin can kind of overwhelm it a little bit, in my personal opinion. I think to me, the most important component is the vermouth, mm-hmm. because I think that's where you can really kind of experiment a little bit with flavors and things. And what's your perfect Negroni? Like if I said, like, all right, what gin are you using? You already said Campari. What gin? What sweet vermouth? Like, what's your perfect Negroni?
Yeah, I like a London dry style gin. So I kind of cut my teeth on Beefeater Negronis, and I usually have Beefeater on hand. But I worked with Forge Gin on my last book tour, and so I drank a lot of Forge Gin, and I really like. So I just wanted to give that transparency of that I did work with him, but I do. It's made like with bartenders in mind, and bartenders love it. So it's a serious gin, from the construction of the bottle to how it tastes. It's meant to be used in a bar and not just stared at. And so I, at home, I use Ford's, has become my house gin. And vermouth, I like using Dolan. So it's a little lighter, like the Carpano.
I don't like it. I don't. That's
you,
the one I try.
Are you Carpano Antica?
Using. Yeah.
See, that's,
yeah.
That's,
or
go ahead.
Yeah, go ahead. No, go ahead. I'm curious what you're going to say.
The Carpano Antica can be a little bit of a bully as a vermouth, because it's got strong vanilla and strong orange notes. And to me, it's a little more, it's like a winter vermouth. So I like Carpano Antica in a Manhattan, because it's a little more spirited and austere. But in the Negroni, I mean, I like Cinzano. I'll use Cinzano a lot if I have it, but I tend to have Dolan because of those half bottles. I like its floral. It's light, and it doesn't.
That's why I don't like it. It's too light. Too light. Yeah, it feels like watery to me. Whereas the Carpano, it gives it like a little bit of complexity. Or have you ever done Punta Mez?
Yeah, I definitely did that.
I like that in the winter. Yeah. You know, it gives a little bit of backbone. I don't know if I'm getting the pronunciation right, so I apologize.
No, that's
but
it.
Like Kochi.
Oh, yeah. Kochi.
Yeah. That's another one that I've used that I like. But yeah, I didn't even know it was pronounced Dolan. I thought it was just Dolan.
Well, I mean, I guess the French way is Dolan. But yeah, Dolan.
This is where I learn something each time I do a podcast. But I just find it like, it's like the one I didn't like. Because I went through a period. I go through this period with food and drink in general where I'll obsess over one thing and then I just like kind of move on to the next thing. And I went through like a Negroni phase where I was like, you know, making them too often. And so like I was, you know, experiment. But the thing is, you can only experiment so much when you're buying bottles of gin.
Yeah.
You know, I wasn't full, you know. And so like the Dolan was the one that I was kind of like, yeah, I'm not feeling this one as much.
I don't do it at home too much, but I know like at Long Island Bar, which is one of my favorite Brooklyn bars and other bars too, but they'll split vermouths in different drinks. So I think Toby Cicchini does use Cinzano and Carpano Antica because like it's like one is a little too heavy, one's a little too light. So you find a medium.
I like that.
And even the base, he uses two different ryes instead of one rye. So that's a way to sort of layer upon it.
That's cool. I like that.
Yeah, no, I kind of in the Dolan is they have those great half bottles in all their expressions, the Bianco and the dry vermouth as well. So it's kind of not easy to keep on hand. I like loose style vermouth a lot too. I've never used it's a Spanish vermouth. I've never used it in a Negroni. I usually use their, I would just drink that on the rocks with orange. But and then for a non-Campari option, I'm a big fan of Fourth Ave Spirits here in Brooklyn.
That is good.
They're aperitivo called Red. Just takes it a different direction, you know, it tastes different than Campari, but it isn't, some other red bitters, maybe they're not bitter enough. Maybe they don't have enough backbone or mouthfeel to stand up to a Campari. But Fourth Ave, a lot of restaurants I frequent will pour Fourth Ave in their Negroni instead. But I think you have to, if you're not using Campari on a restaurant or bar and you have a menu, you should list it. Like I hate when it says Negroni. And I can tell it's not Campari. Like, use whatever vermouth you want.
Also, I hate to say this, but the color of Campari, it's so distinct. Yeah. And I think there you do drink with your eyes to an extent. You're almost looking for that. You know, like, I had made a good one with the Fourth Ave and the Punta Mez. And I forget the gin I used one winter. And it was really delicious, but it didn't look like the classic
look. No, they can, especially like Punta Mez and some other, if you're using like Torino-style vermouth, like Kochi has Torino-style vermouth. It gets a little murkier, a little more amber than red. So I think that red siren, it's not fire engine red necessarily, but depending on what vermouth you're using, it should have a red hue to me and kind of a beacon to me, which I love seeing it. And I think that's part of it, the Negroni's charm is it looks interesting, it looks cool in the glass and a little bit of sophistication, but also ease to it. You know, it's not.
And you gotta have the orange peel, not the orange slice. Don't give me an orange wedge. Give me the peel.
I'm with you. A thick swath of orange peel.
Yes,
for sure.
Give me that zesty sort of spritz it all over.
Spagliato or spice.
It hits you in the nose. It's so good. It signals you're drinking a Negroni.
If it's bubbly, like a spagliato or a spritz, I'm fine with the orange wedge in there. But for something a little more spirit forward, I do like that. Yeah, because you want the aromatics when you're putting it in the glass, but when it's coming up to your nose, you're getting it in there as well.
Okay, here's a super hot take.
Okay.
Nobody actually likes an old fashioned. They just want to be Don Draper.
I disagree.
Like, to me, an old fashioned just tastes like old man. Like it just tastes like old man. I've never been able to get into an old fashioned.
Really?
I think it's because I just don't like whiskey.
Well,
like I'm just not a whiskey drinker. Yeah. I can do bourbon, but whiskey to me is just it's overpowering. It punches me in the face. I've never been able to get into old fashions. I just can't.
I mean, I cut my teeth on bourbon. Like that was one of the first spirits I really got into. Which led me to the old fashioned and most bars are making old fashions now, with a simple syrup instead of a sugar cube. And it might be a rich syrup, which is like either two times the sugar or a demerara syrup. So I think
it's sweet linoleum.
They can be sweet, but they're austere too. They're when you take that ice cube out, it's just, you know, 2 ounces of bourbon, a bar spoon of sugar, some bitters, you know, and you get some dilution if you're stirring it from a mixing glass, but it's a sipper, but it's not, it's a short kind of thing. No, I think there's so many variations with that. Cause you can have, you don't have to use bourbon to still have an old fashioned, but I like my, I truthfully don't drink a lot of them when I'm out. But it was something I went through a big phase of those. And it had nothing to do with Don Draper. I get it. Like, yeah, things do spike, whether it's a martini or a Manhattan, because of an appearance on a notable show like that, where it seems like, hey, you know, let's do that in bar carts and barware sales. I think it's a good drink, but there's so many variations where it can be made poorly, and it is like watching a bartender make one is a way to sort of test. But I think we're at the point in the old-fashioned you know, status now where you should be able to get a decent one. But you know, I just wrote about the Wisconsin Old Fashioned, which is a whole other animal. I'm not sure if you're familiar with it, but
no.
They use brandy. They use like a cheap Korbel brandy. They muddle the sugar cube.
Hey, I'm not bashing Wisconsin right now. Wisconsin is a very important state as it pertains to when this is airing. So yeah, Wisconsin, so we love you. We love you in Brooklyn.
No, absolutely. And a lot of them, like Toby, Robert Simonson, Brian Bartles, who I mentioned, some of my favorite Drinks World people all hail from Wisconsin, and so
go Packers.
Yeah. So, but I think it's a little more sessionable because they use brandy, which is lighter. They use like the neon red cherries, the sugar wedge. They muddle it up, but then it has different options of your topping. So they call it sweet, which would be a splash of 7-Up, sour, which would be a squirt, or a press, which is squirt and a little soda water. So it's a little more sessionable. The story ended up being like, you know, when you have 8 of anything in a row, anything is sessionable. But so it doesn't hit you as hard, but it's not an old fashioned, like you would never see it outside of Wisconsin. So I think, yeah, like there's probably some bad ones out there, and that's probably where it steered you wrong. But if you don't like whiskey, you're probably not drawn to it. I mean, I don't know.
You know, I made a comment that nobody likes an old fashioned, but you actually just jarred my memory. The absolute, I was going to actually throw a hot take at you that the most overrated cocktail of all time is the Bloody Mary.
Yeah.
Because I, quite frankly, your base of it, tomato juice, is just, who wants to drink that? Like, I'm just not into that. However, Bloody Mary is still not the worst cocktail. The worst cocktail, I actually blocked it out of my head because of just, it's so awful and repugnant. And you, when you mentioned, you know, I think you mentioned sour, and it hit me. There's nothing worse than a Long Island iced tea. Island iced tea is just, just a bastion for getting you drunk. That's all it is. It's, let's just dump a bunch of alcohol in a glass and have fun. Like, it just doesn't, it's too much.
Is anyone drinking that though, aside from, you know, maybe like raucous beach bars? Or, I mean,
people try to tell me that you can make a good one, and I'm sure you can. No. Any great bartender can make something good, but like, no, like I have childhood nightmares of being, you know, underage, and like when you're underage, you know, and you know, you want to like quote unquote get drunk fast or whatever. Mm-hmm. Like that's like the drink, you know, it's just straight booze, but it's gross. It's like if you're constructing a dish as a chef and you go like 5 ingredients too far and you just muddle up the whole thing. It's like, hey, let's take a pizza and we'll throw some eggplants and anchovies and truffle oil and arugula and prosciutto, and they're all good on their own. And we're just going to mix them all up and it'll be great. No, that's a Long Island iced tea.
Well, I think it was of a certain era. You know, like when I tended bar, my only time tending bar was like 4 summers of my college years. And it was at a beach bar in upstate New York called Harpoon Eddie's. And that was, you know, everything came from a gun and mixes. So it was that era of sugary drinks and Sex on the Beach and tequila sunrises. And I served a ton of Long Island iced teas, and they were poorly made. It's just all the white booze. It's like vodka, rum, tequila, and gin. I don't know if gin's in there. I could be wrong. And then splash of Coke or splash of sour mix and serve. And I think we had a limit on how many you could have. But I think now like a bartender could like make their own cola syrup, or use artisanal spirits. And but the idea is, you know, we're now down to like a 3 ounce cocktail or 4 ounce when diluted versus the big Birdbath martini glass, you know. So it's like we're it's not about the quantity. And then it was about like, what's the thing I can get hammered on? I would agree with you on that, but I don't see it in the wild at all, at least the places I frequent. But the Bloody Mary, if there's room to talk about that, I was never a big fan.
Thank you.
I used to have one, Prime Eats before they closed. They made theirs with aquavit and it was pretty austere, but they get comically, the condiments go crazy now.
You're drinking cocktail sauce.
Yeah. And they're never quite right, but
Now they're putting, you know, skewers of shrimp in them.
Yeah, fried chicken.
Like all this, like,
sausages.
Like what is, like, come it's on, crazy. Stop.
Yeah,
it's the crazy milkshake of the cocktail world.
Yeah, that was another Wisconsin tradition. And one good thing about this, they call it a snit. They serve most Bloody Marys with a little short glass of beer, and so again, like two drinks for one. But I think maybe once or twice I've had a Bloody Mary. And again, too, I if anyone ever ordered one afternoon, not to be like an Italian with a cappuccino, but no one has any business drinking Bloody Mary at night. I know you should be able to drink what you want, but that's definitely a daytime drink if you are going to have one. But yeah, I don't crave a Long Island iced tea, and I think I've never actually had one. I've made plenty of them, but I may have seen one like as a gag, like I said, like a reverse engineered one, but it like a Booker and Dax type place, but I can't recall. But I don't think I think business being out there right now.
All right, last hot take I'm going to throw at
okay.
you. We'll just do this one true or false, and we'll do it lightning round style.
Okay,
Fernet Branca is hipster mouthwash. True or false?
False.
I disagree. But
yeah, no, I mean, as someone who writes about Amaro, I know it's more than just that, but yeah, no, it's more than that. It is.
I'm biased though.
False,
I'm biased against Fernet because the worst probably hangover of my life involved it. And it was just a bad night many, 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 many years ago, pre-kids. And it involved me sloppily putting it in hot chocolate. I don't ask. It was just not a, it was a really bad next day. I'm glad I survived it. It was just,
Fernet,
so I will never,
and hot chocolate is a great drink. So I'm not, I mean, you sounds like you're doing everything right, but no, on paper, I know I'm just true or false. So I'm not allowed to talk. Am I allowed to talk or no?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Stop talking.
No, I thought you said it's true or false.
Yeah, no, I was just having fun.
Okay. No,
you may speak, Brian.
It does have it's very mentholated. It has a mouthwash kind of taste to it. But when you get beyond that, like, and most people are doing it as a shot, like most bartenders do it as a shot. And when in a cocktail, usually using a scant amount of it because it is so powerful. But it is one that's great, like in food applications, so like gelatos or desserts or chocolate sauces. I've seen a lot of Fernet Branca, you know, mint gelato kind of combos. And I just got a media request for a spike your hot chocolate recipe, and I gave them one with Fernet Branca. So it was just funny that you said that, because to me that the mintiness and the chocolate do play well together. But yeah, it is. It's one of those things like bartenders and suspenders and arm garters. It takes a certain. It's gone. You know, starts with something genuine.
It jumped the shark.
Jumped the shark. But I think it's one of the most historical Amari out there. And it's beloved in the bartender community. So, and as someone who writes about Amaro, I would never say false to that or true to that. So
I tried to pin you down. Yeah. I tried to get controversial here.
I didn't take my bait, but I'm on to you.
Listen, Brad, thank you so much for your time. Again, we're recording this before, a very pivotal day, election day. It's dropping the morning after, I hope when this drops, we can celebrate good things and not be in a civil war or who knows what else. So, but thank you for explaining booze and discussing booze with me here on Hot Takes on a Plate, which is part of the Believe Podcast Network. Check them out at BLEAV.com. You can check me out on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook at Rob Patrone TV. And Brad, what's your Instagram? Where, or how do you want people to reach you?
BT Parsons.
BT Parsons on Instagram. He's a great follow if you're into drinking and bars in New York. And of course, make sure to subscribe to the podcast wherever you're listening, or follow if you are on Spotify. Till next time, I'm Rob Petrone. Ciao.
Hey, Keurig coffee drinkers. Need a cold coffee with a bold flavor? Dunkin' Cold K-Cup Pods were specially crafted for cold coffee. Brew over ice straight out of the Keurig coffee maker for smooth, delicious Dunkin' taste you know and love. Find your next Dunkin' Cold coffee in the roasted coffee aisle.
Whether you're a morning person or a bedtime procrastinator, everyone deserves a mattress that works for their style. And you'll find the best mattress for you at Ashley. The new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley brings you one-of-a-kind body-conforming technology, making every sleep tailored to be your best. The collection also features cool-to-the-touch covers and motion absorption to help minimize sleep disruptions from partners, pets, or kids. Shop the all-new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.